4 years ago, an exhibition devoted to the life and work of the Hollywood movie star and princess Grace Kelly opened at the Bendigo Art Gallery. It was a huge success, but just one of the many great exhibitions that the Bendigo Art Gallery has displayed over the last few years. On March the 5th, their latest exhibition will open, and it's devoted to another Hollywood star of the 1950s, Marilyn Monroe. But unlike most of the other exhibitions that Bendigo has had on display in the last few years, this one originated in Australia. Tansy Curtin is the curator of the exhibition and can tell us more about it. Tansy, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
Now, Grace Kelly a few years ago, the wedding dress, you had Treasures of Ancient Greece, I think, now Marilyn Monroe. And one of the great things about this exhibition is that this is an original exhibition for Bendigo, isn't it?
It sure is. So we have curated the exhibition right from the outset. So it's made especially for us here in Bendigo and, of course, us in Australia more generally.
So where did the idea come from and who had the idea? I'm hoping it's you.
Well, we heard about the archive of original documents that 20th Century Fox had, and we thought, oh, that sounds interesting, but can we build a show that we really think people will want to come to? I started basically going out there, talking to Marilyn Monroe collectors, and there are obviously many of them around the world, just putting feelers out, sort of saying, would you be interested in lending to our exhibition if we develop one? Thinking, oh, they're going to say, yeah, where's Bendigo? Who's Bendigo? But in fact, they all came back and said, yes, we'd love to be involved. We'd love to see our collection in Australia. So it was really a case of we couldn't not do this exhibition. It's obviously something that's very timely for us, and people are incredibly interested in it.
So for many of these exhibitions that we have in Australia, not in Bendigo, they're what we would call buy-ins, or at least they would come from the V&A or somewhere else, and then maybe local Australian connections will be added to that. That's not the case with Marilyn Monroe. You've put this together yourself.
That's right. Everything is original to us. We're publishing a catalogue. I've been working directly with lenders. We've got some Australian lenders as well. So it's coming from all around the world just for us here in Bendigo, and you won't see it anywhere else.
And this is the biggest Marilyn Monroe exhibition, obviously, ever in Australia. How does it compare with some that have been shown worldwide?
Well, it's kind of quite interesting, really, because obviously I've been talking to a lot of Marilyn collectors. And while there have been lots of smaller exhibitions, arguably this would be one of the largest internationally as well. And we've got an amazing address from Australia. There's an Australian collector who's never lent it before.
Wow.
So this is amazing, really. This is such a coup.
Okay, we'll get to the 20th Century Fox stuff in a moment. Tell me then about the Australian connection. What have you got from Australia for this exhibition?
Well, of course, we've got that wonderful dress I just mentioned, which is the dress and bolero that Marilyn wore when she sang for the troops in Korea in 1954.
How did that end up in Australia?
Well, actually, this private collector that has it bought it in 1989, really before the kind of Marilyn frenzy began.
Right.
So he was lucky enough to have the opportunity to acquire it, and it's incredible, beautiful condition, and a really important object in terms of Marilyn's own life.
Yeah, tell me about the visit to the troops, one of the most famous troop visits in history, isn't it?
It certainly is, and it's so important for Marilyn and her own career development. Of course, 1954, she and Joe DiMaggio had just got married. Somewhere either on the plane when she and Joe were heading off to Japan for their honeymoon, which actually happened to be baseball clinics that Joe was running in Japan, she was invited to come to Korea and sing for the troops. And when she arrived, she was met with what was really her adoring fan base. These men knew Marilyn through the pin-ups that she'd done. Of course, she'd done nude photo shoots as well.
Yeah.
That was used in the first Playboy magazine, of course. And so these GIs in Korea adored her, and she had something like 100,000 men come and see her over about 6 or 7 concerts. And it was really when she kind of started to recognise her power as a star, and it helped her, I think, have the courage to then go out there and establish Marilyn Monroe Productions,
okay,
her own production company.
There's a famous quote, I think, that she said to Joe DiMaggio. She said to him, 100,000 people cheered me. You don't know what it sounds like. And he said, yes, I do. Because he was a huge baseball
star. He was a huge baseball star.
He had people cheering him his whole life. It was interesting that Marilyn said that. So you've got that from Australia, and that's been lent for the first time, this incredibly famous visit to Korea. What else have you got beyond the 20th Century Fox collection?
Well, we've also got other things from Australia, such as original film posters, day bills from Australian cinemas, things like campaign books, some original magazines such as, you know, Women's Weekly covers and things like that, which all add to that story of Marilyn. And that's all combined with the exhibition, which includes her film costumes from a variety of collectors, as well as personal items of clothing, and of course just objects and kind of, I guess, detritus from everyday life. So really unusual things that you wouldn't really expect to see in a museum, but kind of help to elucidate her life. You know, things like books from her library, or even her makeup, her mascara wand, a little necklace that's just made of basically plastic, but it was something that she treasured, wasn't particularly valuable, but gives us a little bit of insight into who Marilyn Monroe the person was.
Her address book would be fascinating.
It would indeed.
Are you able to look through it and see who's mentioned?
No, unfortunately
not.
What,
you can't open it?
No.
You must have been able to do it with white gloves on, surely.
Oh, I can certainly do those sorts of things,
yeah,
but not for the public. And things like film scripts and things like that, where we can see that she heavily annotated the scripts, and it gives us a really good insight into her kind of acting method as well.
All right, but hang on, I want to find out whose names are in this address book.
Well, people like Frank Sinatra, who obviously she was very close friends with. In fact, Frank Sinatra gave her a puppy.
And what was the name of that puppy, Tansy?
It was called Math, reputedly named after the Mafia,
That's
who, of course,
right.
Frank Sinatra apparently had links to, as we know.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why you'd even suggest that. So Frank's in the book. Who else? A lot of blokes, I suppose, in Hollywood.
I think so.
Yeah,
I mean,
okay.
I'm sure the Kennedys were in there as well.
Ooh, under some fake name, I'm sure.
That's right.
So you've got her camera?
We do indeed. Her childhood camera that she took around with her right through her adult life. And
really?
She had this sort of trunk of items that she kept taking from home to home. And it was things like the camera, gossip magazines from early on in her career, a few other little bits and pieces that don't really have any value, but kind of show us what was important to her.
Well, she had a very tragic childhood, and I suppose these are the things that she carried with her, these small items, these mementos almost, that would give her some kind of grounding as she moved from home to home and looked after, I think, by her mother or grandmother, who then I think died in an insane asylum. It was a tragic childhood.
She did. She did have a really difficult childhood. She, of course, born in 1926. Her mother put her into foster care not long after her birth. Of course, we're talking about Norma Jean here, well before she was Marilyn. And then she kind of went from she went from six or seven different foster homes. She also was in an orphanage for a while. And then her carers, who were a friend of her mother, they were moving out of state. And because Marilyn was a ward of the state, she was not able to move out of state with them. So she ended up getting married at age 16.
Yes.
So, you know, I think she had a troubled childhood, but she did, you know, she transcended that very effectively and transformed herself into this incredible Hollywood star.
Yes, amazing. Yes, as you say, married at 16 to Jim Doherty, I think, who
That's
worked
right.
in an aircraft factory. And
he did. And then Marilyn herself went to work in a munitions factory during the Second World War.
Yep.
And that's when she was discovered by an army photographer and joined a modelling agency.
It's an amazing story.
It is amazing. And I think people sort of forget that she didn't just become an actress overnight. She had to work really hard. In fact, a lot of the studio executives didn't think she had any charisma, and she wasn't photogenic, which is hard for us to believe,
amazing,
really, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's all on display, or it will be very soon, at the Bendigo Art Gallery, and the exhibition simply called Marilyn Monroe. Okay, so you've got a lot of outfits from 20th Century Fox. We'll get to them in a moment as well. But beyond that, a cocktail dress that she wore when her third husband, Arthur Miller, won a special prize. Tell me about the prize and the dress.
Well, it's a lovely dress, and I think what's really interesting, and we'll talk about the film costumes later, but what's really interesting about Marilyn's personal clothing is it differs very significantly from what she wore when she was in film. It was much more kind of demure, pared down, not kind of over the top. And it's just, you know, it's amazing to see the kind of difference between that and her public kind of persona, I suppose. And, of course, she did marry Arthur Miller in 1956, a very famous pairing. And she wore this dress to an event held by the American Academy of Arts and Letters, where Arthur Miller received the gold medal for drama in May 1959. So, of course, Marilyn and Arthur were married from 56 through to 61. And it's kind of an, I think people saw her even then as being quite superficial and frivolous and were surprised at the pairing of her and Arthur Miller, of course, one of America's greatest playwrights. But I think people perhaps didn't understand, and they might not even understand today, that Marilyn was really concerned with kind of extending her mind, and she took a lot of night classes and university classes to kind of build her knowledge. She had a very extensive library as well. So, in fact, she was reading Arthur Miller's books, and that's how she got to know him.
Also, the last known photograph taken of Marilyn Monroe was around about July 28, 29 of 1962. She died in, about a week later or
that's
so.
Right.
You've got the blouse that she was wearing in that photo.
We have. So it's a beautiful green Emilio Pucci blouse, and it comes from a private collection. And it's an incredible object. Marilyn loved Emilio Pucci. It really, again, highlights her personal style, much more pared down. Still kind of showed off her lovely hourglass figure, but in a much more subtle way. And in fact, those photographs were taken of Marilyn at the Calneva Lodge, which was owned by Frank Sinatra, of course, on the California-Nevada border. Quite a famous little spot, again, connected to mafia, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But so those photographs were taken that weekend. She also wore the blouse when she was practicing her famous tribute to JFK when she was doing practice singing for Happy Birthday, of course, where she wore that famous gown, translucent gown.
Well, there's a famous quote about that as well from Arthur Schlesinger, who was one of Kennedy's counsellors. And he said, oh, the dress was made of skin and beads. I didn't see the beads. So you don't have that, I presume.
We don't. I tracked it as far as New York. It was sold in 1999 at the huge Marilyn auction. And at that time, it was the highest selling dress at $1.6 million.
The highest selling dress in history.
It's actually now been usurped by another Marilyn dress, which is the famous white dress, subway dress that she wore in the 70 Rich, which went for $5.6 million.
Wow.
In 2012. So, yes, I could not find the beautiful dress from Jean-Louis design dress from Happy Birthday, Mr. President. I tracked it as far as New York, but then
the trail goes cold.
That's right. It's all about detective work when you're curating these sorts of exhibitions.
It must be fantastic fun, though, as well. You're with Rod Quinn. This is ABC Local Radio Overnights. My guest is Tansy Curtin, the curator of the Marilyn Monroe exhibition at the Bendigo Art Gallery. So what about then some of the clothes, or the costumes, the dresses that she wore in her movies? What have you got?
We've got quite a range. We've got some really famous ones, such as the incredible Ori Kelly designed dress from Some Like It Hot. Again, another dress that's perhaps a little more flesh than it was sparkles. A lovely translucent dress. And of course, Ori Kelly was an Australian-born designer, so very significant, and won an Academy Award for his costume design for that film.
For that film, and people would have hopefully seen his life story in the Gillian Armstrong film,
That's
Women
right.
Who's Undressed, recently.
Exactly. It was a wonderful story. We've also got costumes from films such as Gentlemen Prefer Blondes and How to Marry a Millionaire, and, of course, the film that she made under the banner of Marilyn Monroe Productions, which is The Prince and the Showgirl, she made in London with Laurence Olivier in 1955-56. So there's quite a range and lots of different stories to kind of tell around those as well.
And people may have seen the story of The Prince and the Showgirl in that movie My Week with Marilyn.
Exactly. So a nice recent adaptation of that story, and it gives us a little insight into Marilyn the person, and also the trials and tribulations of being on set with her and also Laurence Olivier.
How do you go about getting those costumes? These are worth a lot of money, as you pointed out, with the selling price of some of those dresses at auction.
Well, the interesting thing is that 20th Century Fox do not own any costumes anymore. So in the 1970s, 1970 and 1971, the film studios, Hollywood film studios, were really struggling, mostly because of television television and kind of the, I guess, loss of revenue that they were experiencing as a result of the advent of television. And so in the 70s, first MGM and then 20th Century Fox, they sold off all their props and all their costumes. So prior to that, they had huge wardrobes, and often dresses would, so many of Marilyn's dresses were worn by her, then returned to the wardrobe department and worn by other stars, or even borrowed for other events. So they sold hundreds and hundreds of lots at their 1971 auction, and a lot of them went into collections such as Debbie Reynolds.
Oh, yes. She had them on display in Vegas for a long time.
She did, and she was very keen to actually establish a museum, but unfortunately, you know, we know how much museums cost to establish. So, you know, a lot of those costumes went into private collections at that time, and some have been sold again, but some haven't been seen again. And, of course, because many were reworn again and again, they perhaps haven't stood the test of time. Uh-huh. For example, the dress that she wore when she sang Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend from, yep, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. I've been told by a number of Marilyn collectors that that dress no longer exists because the fabric just shattered and fell apart,
wow,
basically.
Isn't that amazing?
So then,
what are the iconic Marilyn dresses? You mentioned some Like It Hot and one or two others. What are the ones that will be on display and have stood the test of time?
Well, those ones that I mentioned certainly have. I mean, the Prince and the Showgirl is quite interesting because it's the only gown that she wore really during the film. They actually made five of them because, you know, obviously she'd get a bit stinky, yeah, otherwise, yeah, if she wore the same wig one again and again. So it's a beautiful gown. It's quite fragile, but we're lucky enough to have one of those, and it has stood the test of time. We actually have, interestingly enough, the original costume Marilyn was to wear to sing Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend. So it's quite a nice story that goes with that. When they were filming Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, that was when it kind of came out in the media that Marilyn was the figure who modelled for the famous Tom Kelly photograph, the nude photograph. And so the studio executives tried to deny it. And, oh, no, we can't have one of our stars being seen in a nude photograph.
This is the famous one against the red background.
Yes, yeah. The red velvet, beautiful. Yeah. And, of course, she appeared in a calendar and then was used for the first Playboy centerfold. And so Marilyn thought, well, I think I'll actually use this publicity to my advantage. So she admitted to it and told a story about how, you know, she was desperate for money. She had no money at the time, and she needed the money. And so she did this modelling shoot and thought nothing more of it. And so it was amazing. The kind of the community, the public came out in support of Marilyn. So it kind of actually worked in her favour. But at that time, Fox decided that, oh, we can't really put her in this costume. It was kind of a showgirl costume. It was bejeweled and bedazzled and kind of over the top, fishnet, this sort of thing. And so that's when they swapped it out for the pink dress that, wow, we know so well. But we've actually got part of the original costume, which is quite incredible that survived, and the pink one hasn't. So
yes,
it's kind of really nice to rediscover these. And it's a beautiful gown from Let's Make Love, which, of course, is Marilyn's last musical, and again, a film with Fox, and typical kind of Marilyn style with the halter neck style gown, another gorgeous one.
So it's amazing there that the one from Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, it's famous because Marilyn didn't wear it.
Exactly. It's kind of a lovely story. And then there are so many different stories that go with each,
indeed,
of the gowns and objects.
And you found those stories as you tracked all these down. Did you track them down individually, or was there somewhere where there are a whole lot of these costumes?
There are a number of collectors that do have a number of items, so they collect lots of different things. So one collector I've been working with sort of focuses on the private life of Marilyn, so collects her personal clothing and objects belonging to her, things that came from her house. Then there are other collectors who really focus on the film costumes. So there's a great collector in Barcelona that has a huge number of her kind of film costumes, and in fact some of them came from Debbie Reynolds' collection. So, you know, it is a case of you find collectors that have a number of items. Of course, there's a lot that's dispersed around the world. So, you know, some collectors might just have a book that used to belong to Marilyn,
sure,
or something signed by her. So you have to be obviously quite clever, because it would get extraordinarily expensive if you're shipping every little tiny object.
And the only place you will see all of them together is in Bendigo
That's right.
The exhibition begins on the 5th of March and runs through until the 10th of July. So you've got 4.5 months to see this exhibition.
That's right. We knew that it would be a very popular exhibition. And when you're putting the kind of energy into it, you want to have it on for a good time so that as many people as possible can get to see it and really enjoy the exhibition. So, and I should mention, we've obviously got the incredible 8 metre high Forever Marilyn sculpture.
Right. Now, where did that come from? And what does it look like, and where does it come from?
It is an incredible sculpture. It's by the artist Stuart Johnson, who is an American artist originally from New Jersey. And the sculpture has come from New Jersey. It's come from his atelier in New Jersey. And it's called Forever Marilyn. And it's a sculpture of Marilyn from her most famous scene in The Seven-Year Itch, which, of course, is the white dress standing over the subway grave.
Yeah,
putting her in a new context.
When you take
her from being a photograph to being an 8-metre-high sculpture, it really changes the meaning and our understanding and thinking about how something becomes iconic, what makes it iconic, and what do we do to something when we translate it from a small image to larger than life. It's really interesting to think about.
And people are already having their photo taken with that.
They certainly are. It's really lovely to see. She's right in the middle of Bendigo's, placed right opposite our famous Alexandra Fountain, framed by two lovely palm trees. You could almost think she was in Hollywood somewhere, or Palm Springs or something. And just a great thing to have your photo with, or have take a photo of her. She's really incredible.
And no doubt you'll be screening Marilyn's films throughout the exhibition
as
well.
Oh yes, we certainly will. So we'll have a lot of film excerpts within the exhibition, some of the films from 20th Century Fox and other film studios that also worked with Marilyn, but also some original newsreel footage as well. I think it's really interesting to see Marilyn off the big screen, as it were. So some of the interviews are more intimate moments of sort of behind the scenes things as well, to give people a little bit more insight into who Marilyn Monroe was.
I think people will know about that once they've seen this exhibition, Marilyn Monroe at Bendigo Art Gallery. And amazingly, Tansy, you've pulled this together. How long has it taken you to do it?
It's taken a couple of years, but, you know, all these things do take time, and negotiating with lenders and working internationally. So, yeah, it's been a fantastic project to work on.
Thank you so much for telling us about it.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's Tansy Curtin, curator of the Marilyn Monroe exhibition, which opens at the Bendigo Art Gallery on March the 5th.